This is Blue Moon. It's the original fan-made Manchester City podcast. Coming up, we've got news and views from City's Week. It's your club, and this is your show.
So, all things considered, last Sunday possibly couldn't have gone any better for Manchester City. Comfortably into the fourth round of the FA Cup with that 5-0 win over Huddersfield, securing a win in the Blue Moon podcast charity bet as well. Plus, some good minutes for some key players returning from injury. And on top of all of that, a couple of promising youngsters got some vital first-team experience. And just when you think it was going all swimmingly, Spurs away comes out the hat for the next round of the competition. Still, we've got to win or even score there sometimes, so maybe it'll happen at the end of this month. On today's Blue Moon podcast, we'll take a look back at the key talking points from that Huddersfield game, which, let's face it, could be dominated by the return of one player in particular. Then we'll look ahead to a tricky tie at Newcastle. Alex Hurst from the True Faith Newcastle United podcast will be on the show a bit later on. I'm David Mooney, and it's just like old times because I'm joined by City fan Sam Rosbottom.
Hello, mate.
And all the way from the USA, we've got the Noisy Neighbours podcast pair. We got Joey.
Hey, how you doing?
And Mulv.
Good morning, David and Sam.
Morning.
And Joey.
And Joey, yes.
Oh, hey, Marv, hi.
Yeah, you two know each other, I believe.
Mm,
yeah,
we've met.
Yeah. Mm. Sam, before we get into the show, can we just address the elephant in the room that we've had another name change from you?
Another? Still the same, just to clarify, just from a vanity perspective, I've changed it. No, not really. Just because... Right, the story is the Sam Roscoe thing was because back in the day when I was working alongside David in radio, Rosbottom's a bit of a mouthful to say on the air. So it was agreed by several parties that Roscoe's just easier and is a bit of a cheesy radio name. So we ran with that. It was my Twitter handle as well for a bit. That's changed now. And yeah, it's same old me, Sam Rosbottom.
Yeah,
that's so who I am. That's who I've always been.
But long time listeners will remember you as Sam Rosbottom back in the day, and then we just changed it for no reason at the start, just to keep at the start of us going weekly, just to keep it consistent with your radio persona. And I'm like, I genuinely don't really know why.
Regardless of his name, though, like the swagger on Rosbottom is crazy. Like the clean bald head, the glasses, the low trimmed beard. Like proper old and Riz God.
Yeah.
I feel like Malv's just trying to hype himself up here by tagging on to Sam.
Hey, I mean, as City fans, we can't knock a bald man, can we? That's the
true
thing.
True.
Yeah. Genius, actually.
Bald genius. Oh, is that what we're going with now, is it? I see. Right. All right, yeah. Joey Mulv, it's great to have you on. It is really early over there. Tell me, why have you got out of bed at this time to do this shit?
Well, I've been up for 2 hours, so this is... This is standard, actually. And either way, this is still less shit than anything Mulv and I would do. So
we haven't done a podcast of our own this week, so this seemed like a great opportunity to put a shift in.
Excellent. I'm glad
like,
you've...
This is like the warm-up for it, then, yeah?
Yeah.
We're just true professionals, you know what I mean?
Yeah, this is pre-season to the actual season. Right, so well, 2024 is upon us, which means a packed schedule of FA Cup, AFCON, and, of course, Premier League action. Beat the January Blues and watch every game with the atmosphere it deserves down at your local Green King Sports Pub. For City, that includes this weekend's trip to Newcastle. Don't settle for a dodgy stream. If it's on the telly, it's on at your local Green King across their huge HD screens. If you download the Green King Sports app, you also receive 10% off every single drink whenever there's a game on. And that's not just City games either. Their venues offer a range of low and no alcohol options. So dry January doesn't mean you have to settle for a worse sports watching experience. Speaking of a sports watching experience, let's start then with the overall performance against Huddersfield, because we'll come to the big guy coming back shortly. But Joey Mulv, I'll start with you guys. Joey, you couldn't really have asked for a better day, really, against Huddersfield, could you?
Yeah, no, that's kind of what you want, right? Lower division team in the cup, kind of rotated squad, get some guys back, thump them. I mean, on to the next. No, you know, no major injuries, I don't think. But it's what more can you want?
Yeah,
5-0.
Yeah, I mean, well, 6-0, 7-0 could have gone further, couldn't we?
True, 10. I guess I'm being nice, but yeah, 5-0 in the cup, and true, yeah, 6-1 maybe.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's pretty nice.
Yeah, when the lineup came out, Wolf, we quite happy to see the not necessarily the rotation, but the kind of opportunities for some of the lesser used players, because it's not just kind of youngsters in there. It's like Nunez and Kovacic got some time as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Nunez, for example, gaining valuable experience with every game. I think just a great guy to have in the squad, even if his long term role isn't that clear yet. Kovacic, yeah, I mean, always when Rodri's not on the team sheet, somebody's got to, or multiple players perhaps, have to fill that void. And I thought Kovacic was excellent in this, and it was good to see him tried at the lone six.
Yeah, and Sam, I mean, you look at, Joey said no major injuries. There was obviously the injury to Akanji that we don't really know the extent of yet. What did you make of that whole incident, though?
Not ideal, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, we talked about, we couldn't really ask for a better day. Look, lower league opposition, chance to see some fringe players get some very good minutes, some academy players get some very good minutes, and hopefully have no injuries, but that wasn't quite the case. And like we said, we don't know the full extent of Akanji's injury, but clearly he was in a lot of discomfort, and it never looks positive, does it, when you see that? I think
What did you think of the challenge? Because it's interesting that I've seen the suggestion that like the VAR should have looked at it. It was a straight red. And when I watched it back, and when I watched it at the time, I was genuinely thinking that's just a good challenge. He's just fallen quite awkwardly there. So like there's a huge discrepancy in kind of opinion around this. So what did you think?
Well, there's just a huge discrepancy in VAR, isn't there, at the minute, which doesn't lead us into any clarity, unfortunately. It's one of them, isn't it? Like, you know, like you say, you can see if there is, you know, a check that it could be something in there, but then equally, you know, there's a strong argument for scrapping VAR altogether and going back to the days when players had put each other in the stands, sort of thing. And that was, you know, one of those, wasn't it? Like I said, it's not ideal that we've come away with this with an injury. The interesting thing and the positive to take from it was seeing Rico Lewis go back
at right back, yeah,
right back, and how he coped with that. Admittedly, you know, he wasn't playing against opposition that were going to test him massively, but it was good to see that Pep had the faith to put him at right back and trust him in that position. And that's certainly a positive in my eyes.
Yeah. Joey Move, what were your thoughts on the challenge? Red card or fine challenge?
I thought it was a nasty tackle, David.
Yeah.
Looked to cause possibly multiple injuries to Akanji. He takes the foot out from him, so his groin is definitely in trouble there. The knee, I think, is what ultimately gets him out of the game, but also stomped on his foot as well. So there was multiple potential injuries there, and I'm keen to find out how he is.
Yeah. Joey, I honestly thought he could have gone for the elbow on Lewis in the build-up to it, but I thought, I actually, when I saw the challenge, I thought it was fine, but you know, maybe I'm the one that's not seeing things.
Yeah, it's... Like you said, there's a lot leading up to that, right? So there's an elbow on Lewis, then, like Mulv said, couple bites at Akanji. So I don't know. He probably could have gotten something for one of those, but I don't understand what is and isn't a red card or a handball or offside or any of it right now. So there's no... I've kind of given up on trying to figure out what should have been and what wasn't and all that kind of stuff, because the guys that make the calls don't know, so how the hell would I?
Yeah, and hey, we won 5-0, so let's not...
True.
let's not dwell too much. Doku was back, Mulf. Not the big injury return, I know. We will come on to him. But it's good to have a few more options, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think we've really missed him, to be honest. I just think he's been brilliant since he got here. And a real surprise that he's had the immediate impact he's had. I saw him coming in as just a very raw talent. What I'd seen was just cameos in Belgium matches where he came on. He was just this sort of enigmatic, you know, live wire that I thought would need some taming once he got to Manchester City. But
quite in the terms opposite of anything, really, isn't it? Yeah.
In terms of, you know, if you compare him to Grealish, he does most of what Grealish does very well. Plus, he's got that extra bit of pace in him to go past the player. So Really excited to have him back on the score sheet straight away. Brilliant.
And he gave you a new dance move.
Oh God, okay. What's this one now? The last one. I'm not up to date with the last one. What was it called? The gritty.
Yeah,
Mold's got a sick gritty, dude. It's nuts.
Nah. Less said about
there's,
that.
There's the nothing. Title of this week's podcast.
Mulv's got a sick gritty.
Yeah. If you were going to have to bust out a dance move in celebration, Joey, what would it be?
Oh, I wouldn't. I would. Usually, I'm on the floor during a match. Anyways, I'm just crouched, hiding behind a bar stool or something because I'm having a panic attack. So usually, it's just standing up, and I'm shocked, and I'm just looking for someone to hug. But I guess the worm at a pub is a it's a risky
maneuver. In there,
yeah. That's great. Is that a promise?
I don't know. I feel like you liquor me up enough, I might bust one out. Who knows?
Sav, let's complete the set. What's your dance move in celebration? I know you're more of a Shearer, arm in the air, run off towards the corner flag guy. But come on, you got to bust out a dance move now you've scored.
Well, to be honest with you, like you said, you know, the Shearer hand in the air is my go to because scoring goals isn't a surprise for me.
Oh!
But if
we have played together. Remember, I've seen you play.
Yeah,
Swagger.
Yeah. I think I'd, yeah, to go along the swagger theme that Mulv has has painted for me, I'll go with a moonwalk.
Excellent. Ooh. Excellent. Yeah, you don't see many moonwalks in Premier League football, do you? That's
not enough.
Not enough.
In fact, I'll go with a blue moonwalk.
Oh, you've got too far. Too far. Yeah.
Okay.
Too far. Mulv, obviously, we've ignored the elephant in the room of De Bruyne's return for the first 11 and a half minutes of the show, but we're here now. How did it feel when you saw him back on the touchline, ready to come on?
Yeah, amazing. Just reminded of how lucky we are that we've had his best years, and not to take him for granted in a season that's going to be it's going to require something to separate the cluster of teams at the top. Unveiling Kevin De Bruyne for the stretch run has got to strike fear in every rival fan base.
Yeah, Klopp wasn't happy, was he? He said something about being that the entire league being nervous about it, but I think not in such polite language. Sam, were you surprised at how long Guardiola gave him in this game, given he came on in the 57th minute, which for someone who's been out for, what, 3, 4, 5 months injured, it's quite early.
Yes, that was a little bit of an eyebrow raiser, to be honest with you. I think we all expected maybe 20 minutes max for him. I think that was certainly what we were saying when we were on the way to the game. You know, it'd be great to see De Bruyne, but let's not go crazy. Let's just expect at least 20 minutes, if that. But I think when you look at, especially given how the season started for him, how there was concerns that he might not necessarily be fit, and then he starts against Burnley, and then he lasts 23 minutes, and you see, you know, the stomach drops in every Man City fan when they see Kevin De Bruyne pull up early into a game, and it's oh no, not again moment. And that, I think, lives with us, doesn't it? Whenever we go through these periods of Kevin De Bruyne coming back from injury, it's very much all the cotton wool in the world to wrap him around and just please be fit and get through this initial period of coming back, getting up to match fitness, because everybody knows what he is capable of and the levels that he is capable of. And not just that, not just him and his own personal performance, but the impact he has on the team, the Manchester City team, the players around him, the impact, for example, that he has with Erling Haaland, is phenomenal, which we saw last season. And I think a lot of people are hoping and to a certain extent expecting that when Kevin De Bruyne is back and he is fit, that City will kick on into this entire different level, which we know they're capable of when a fully fit Kevin De Bruyne is there. And that's kind of where I think we're all looking at the table at the minute and going, yeah, it's tight, but City are there without Kevin De Bruyne and Haaland fully firing. And that's what they've got to come back to. It's really cliche, but it's going to be like a brand new signing when Kevin De Bruyne is fully fit and back in that Manchester City squad. We know what impact he can have. And to be honest with you, the expectation that is on him, we know what impact he will have. And we saw it, albeit against Huddersfield and, you know, not for the full game even. You know, when he came on, he had such an impact. He's so direct. He is completely happy to play those risky passes in behind, which splits defences, which is why he's so successful. And it's why, you know, whenever Kevin De Bruyne's on the pitch, most of the time we're all on the edge of our seat.
Yeah. Now, Joey, this is a question to separate the baldies on the podcast from those of us with the hair. What did you think of the new hair in action?
Well, as a flow bro, I'm all about it. You know, winter is flow season. And I think it's good. I think it adds swag to him. I was telling somebody the other day,
he didn't need any more swag, surely.
Oh,
yeah,
did.
But like Kevin De Bruyne entering his Pirlo era is a pretty dope thought. So I don't know. I like it. I think it's going to look good. You know, De Bruyne taking off full pelt, hair blowing in the wind, slows down a little bit, pings in a 30-yard ball to somebody back post who finishes it, and then you just kind of see him shake it out. I mean, come on, dude.
Yeah, there's a...
It's like a lion's mane. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, if I say... There's a
got Mufasa out there, dude.
Yeah, if I say there's a L'Oreal advert, would that make sense to you guys?
Better than Head and Shoulders, isn't it?
Yeah, move, you'll get that. But Joey, yeah, like does that translate? I don't know if it translates to
yeah,
yeah.
So I have shampoo.
Yeah, because he's worth it, basically. But the thing is, Joey, like Sam was talking there about the impact that De Bruyne can have. I thought he looked pretty rusty against Huddersfield, and even rusty, he bagged an assist inside 17 minutes. It's like he's still like even when he's rusty, he's still got it.
Well, yeah, he's the best midfielder the league's ever seen. And I think every time Kevin comes back, for the first, you know, couple matches, he's always just a touch off, where it's you can tell the brain and the eyes are working right, but he hasn't quite connected it to his foot yet. So he'll see a ball that he knows healthy Kevin can play, and he'll attempt it, and it won't quite come off. It's like the radar's working, but he can't quite hit it right.
That's all our excuse at five aside, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. he's Kevin De Bruyne at the end of the day. So even a rusty Kevin De Bruyne against lower league opposition is going to be a menace. And I can't wait to see what it looks like when he's fully healthy again. Like, is it possible that he could be even better? Who knows?
Who knows? It's going to be a lot of fun finding out, though. A lot's been said about De Bruyne's return this week. Dan Burke's been taking a look for us at what both Guardiola and the Belgian have said about his rehabilitation and what we can expect from the midfielder over the next few weeks.
There was a rapturous round of applause when Kevin De Bruyne went for a jog down the sideline during City's 2-0 win over Sheffield United in December. That noise was even louder the next week when he came to the touchline stripped and ready in the 57th minute of the victory against Huddersfield.
He played a really good minutes, really well, so we thought it was better to play the second half in the beginning where the game is more tighter and the spaces, it was so difficult to find because the defence is so deep and really well organised, compact. You have to break the game. We did it, and second half is a little bit more spaces.
That's what Pep Guardiola said after the game when asked about the Belgians' return. De Bruyne also gave his reaction to reporters in the mix zone.
Happy to be back, and I felt good, so I'm pleased about that. I still know I'm nowhere near where I need to be, but you know, it's a good continuation, I would say, from the process that I had the last week. Obviously, the beginning is a big blow, but then after, I know I'm going to be out for basically 5 months, 4 months, whatever it is. So, you know, after the first reaction, I actually thought about myself, I just need to work hard whenever I'm working. And then on the other hand, I could enjoy a little bit the things that I've not been able to do with my family, with my friends. And I took it that way. And, you know, in a way, maybe it was good to refresh a little bit. And I took it that way.
It's been a long road for De Bruyne since his injury. Despite saying there that he's made the best of a bad situation, he admits he's been itching to get back.
It's not like I needed it, but I took it as something that was a disadvantage as an advantage, I think. Obviously, when I reflect on my career, I think been playing 13, 14 years of football, and the last 10 years I've basically done non-stop with a short break. Maybe it was good for me to reset a little bit in a way and take care a little bit of myself, what is not really possible during the year. And, you know, and I hoped I could work hard and come back in a good way, and I feel that I'm doing that.
In his post-Huddersfield press conference, Guardiola was keen not to get too carried away with De Bruyne's return. It's fair to say that City haven't been at their best so far this season, but the manager doesn't think having De Bruyne back will be a magic bullet to their issues.
Kevin helps to win games, so I'm not saying play better. I'm saying that we can play good, you know, in terms of football-wise and everything, but win games, Kevin, Haaland, these guys win games. Kevin is not going to solve the problems that we have. He's not going to do big victories if we are not all together. Kevin helps us in his talent, but we need how today Ruben and Josko defend on the high line and many things that we are getting better. So we'll do it together. I know he can handle the pressure, but I don't want to put all the pressure in Kevin's shoulders because it's not fair.
That's not to say he's not glad De Bruyne is back. Speaking ahead of the Huddersfield game, Guardiola explained what he wanted to see from the Belgian.
Now I don't ask to Kevin to play his level. It's not to be calm and play good minutes and, you know, do the principles they have to do, and the rest will come. When you come back, you need time. It's not, okay, you play, it's the best Kevin. So have to be relaxed, enjoy the minutes he's going to play, try to win the games, help us to win the games. Kevin maybe in 20 minutes can help us more right now than 90 minutes. And after his body will dictate how much, you know, minutes more can get.
Guardiola also said that they're going to be really careful with the midfielder.
It's a question of accumulate timing of training session. This is the most important thing than play 90 minutes and 80 minutes and 90 minutes. If we do that right now, he's going to get injured again. So it has to be even his feeling, you know, how he feels, you know, how he recover for the big action, how he recover. So it's a long time. Didn't make a preseason, 3 months. He's so fresh, he's so having crowd desire, but then the other point, you have to be careful.
Just as the fans have missed having De Bruyne on the pitch, De Bruyne himself has missed it too. Guardiola says he might need to keep the midfielder's feet on the ground.
What I'm concerned the most is the fact to try to avoid it, you know, to be re-incident in this injury. This is what to be careful for the minutes in the first, because enthusiasm in the first minute is, wow, I want to play and play today. But you have to be careful just on that. What Kevin needs, or every player for the long injuries, is accumulate weeks training sessions, weeks and weeks and weeks. And minutes, weeks and minutes. Not make a step back. He can train 4, 5, 6 training sessions in a row, play minutes in a game, and after 4, 5 more training sessions, minutes again, one day 90 minutes, another day 50, and training good in Abu Dhabi. That is the best can happen right now from Kevin.
After the game with Huddersfield, De Bruyne explained how he's found his recuperation over the last few months and how he was feeling after getting more than 30 minutes of first team action.
In the beginning, when I was training, sometimes I was getting tired, you know, because not doing the stuff with the team. I'm pleased with the way it went, you know. I feel good, the moments were good, I felt comfortable in what I was doing, and that was the only thing that I really was looking for. I know it's going to be moments I want to play every game, but I know in the back of my mind I need to take care of myself.
Despite how keen he is to get back into the first team regularly, De Bruyne says he's being sensible with his expectations of how much he'll be involved at the moment.
I think in a way it's good being January, where we have so less games, so, you know, I don't expect myself, to be honest, like playing too many games, and, you know, obviously next week is Newcastle, which is a big game, so I'll expect to be back on the bench, and, you know, if they need me or they want to give me minutes, that will be the case. But then we've got another 2 weeks to do, so that's another 3-4 weeks of training, so that's a different momentum at that time, and we'll see how it is.
De Bruyne's role for the rest of January might only be brief, but as both he and Guardiola have said this week, it's important for his recovery that they take it slowly and that he builds up a run of training sessions alongside whatever game time he can get. It may be that the Belgian barely features against Newcastle this weekend or against Tottenham in the FA Cup, but taking it slowly in the short term could pay off big time in the long run.
Hi, this is Steve Howie and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
Ad-free episodes are available on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
That was Dan Burke looking at what Guardiola and De Bruyne have said. Morf, when you hear them both speak, you can tell they're both being really cautious, can't you, about his reintroduction. The fact that, like he said, like it's not like the old days. You'll play half an hour, then 60 minutes, and then kind of back into the flow, 90 minutes, 90 minutes, 90 minutes. It'll be a case of he might not even get on the pitch against Newcastle. It just entirely depends on the game.
Well, first of all, Dan Burke, amazing. Another OG on the show.
Yeah.
What an honour. Yeah, they're being cautious, and I think rightly so. Hamstring, most common injury, so it needs strengthening over time. And in specific circumstances, I think, that's why I think Huddersfield was a good choice to avoid re-aggravating it. You know, you don't want him probably in the highest pressure games, you know, where he might stretch it again, because, you know, you're looking at 4 to 6 weeks, even with a healthy hamstring that gets pulled. So yeah, I think rightly so they're being cautious with him. It'll definitely be managed, David, because there's actually plenty of great options in that position centrally behind the striker, so no need to rush it. You've got Phil Foden, who's playing out of his skin at the moment in that role. Alvarez has been an excellent deputy while KDB's been out in that role. Obviously, Bernardo, Kovacic, Nunes, Rico Lewis can all play there. So why not? Why not manage it?
Sam, have you ever done your hamstring? I've got a feeling you were there when I did mine, and it wasn't a pretty sight.
Yeah, hamstrings aren't great for me, to be honest with you. I mean, look, having Kevin De Bruyne back is wonderful. You know, rightly so. It isn't like the old days. He's 32 now. And it pains me to say this, but when we look at other City great City legends of recent times that have had a similar impact on the club and on the trophy haul that Kevin De Bruyne has had, you look at the likes of David Silva, Yaya Toure, they were both 34 when they left City. So I don't want to be that guy. I want to, you know,
you are being that guy, though. It's
I want to say Kevin De Bruyne infinity, you know, but we have to be realistic and say we're entering the golden era for Kevin De Bruyne, and we have to enjoy every minute that he's on the pitch for and the impact that he has. We have to really cherish these moments, because if, you know, you look at the trend, it could be suggested that 2-3 more seasons at City for him.
Okay, yeah, I had not even thought of that, and so thank you for bringing the mood down on the great Kevin De Bruyne is back show.
Oh boy,
he's back, but for how long?
Yeah, Joey, it's Mulv mentioned Phil Foden playing well, and Guardiola's kind of been talking about this recently, because the question has been around whether you can kind of force De Bruyne and Foden into the team centrally together, or whether Foden's going to end up shunted back out to the wing. This is what Guardiola said this week. So on Friday, ahead of the Huddersfield game, he said this.
Phil is playing lately unbelievable in that positions, in the threats, and he feels comfortable. And in certain games, of course, he can play both together in that position, in the pockets, in the middle, close to the box. In certain other games, for the stability, maybe not.
And then on Sunday, he expanded on it when he said this.
Always I am a big fan for the talent. Why can't the talent cannot join together, cannot be together? I don't have an argument. When I arrive in Barcelona, the people say, no, Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets cannot play together. Why not? Why not? If they are good, they are intelligent and smart. But in the same time, for our structure, the 4-4-2, we have to change something. But it's really, really important when we have to break games or in the second half, put a lot of talent there in the central position. It's really, really important.
I don't know about you, but it feels like he's teasing a little bit there, because I don't know how much we will see them both together in the centre.
Well, yeah, I think kind of the key to that is he mentioned a 4-4-2, right? I think if we think about De Bruyne and Phil both in midfield, it's a 4-3-3, or it's that box midfield that we were doing last season. 4-4-2 would lead you to believe that it would be Rodri and De Bruyne in the middle, and then somebody up front with Alvarez or Haaland, right? or it would be Alvarez and Haaland. But we've also seen him use kind of a false second striker type thing where De Bruyne has been up there. Foden's been there a little bit. I think if he leans more into the why can't Xavi, Iniesta, and Busquets play together, then yeah, it is a tease.
Hmm.
Because we've said on our show, I have at least, I'm a big fan of a little bit of chaos in the side, and I don't think that...
I think that's the last thing Guardiola wants, isn't it? Yeah,
exactly. Well, that's the issue, you know? I don't think that there's many clubs in the league that could deal with a midfield three of Rodri, De Bruyne, and Foden, but I don't know that Pep wants to relinquish that much control. But I think against, you know, low block sides or something like that, I think that's got to be the move, right? Because De Bruyne can, I think De Bruyne operates better when he's a little bit deeper anyways. So if you had Rodri and De Bruyne a little bit deeper and Foden ahead of them behind whoever the striker is, why not?
Yeah.
I mean, no one can deal with him. He does a lot of what David Silva used to do in that he finds space that shouldn't exist. So lean into it, you know, try it out a few times, see what happens. I'd rather us adjust the wings or adjust what we do with the fullback positions than mess around with the midfield too much. Cause I think we have a rare opportunity here to put three of the best players on the planet on the pitch at the same time in important and dangerous positions. So, you know, why not give it a go?
Yeah, let's just see what happens. I'm so much of my watching football life is just spent going, well, I wonder what would happen if we just did this, and then just kind of see what happens. Joey, I must admit, I love your there was a little subtle nod there as well into I like De Bruyne a little bit deeper. You are literally just trying to turn him into Pirlo, aren't you, in the twilight of his career?
Look. Pirlo deep, De Bruyne deep, those guys, you know what I mean? So you gotta let them go, you know? And who doesn't love a 30 or 40 yard ball from De Bruyne that rips apart an entire team and ends up on the foot of Grealish or Doku or Alvarez or Haaland, you know? So I think it just works. I think when De Bruyne was at his best, he was a little bit deeper and not up kind of in the hole right behind the striker. So I think you let that go. Foden's a little more mobile and more dynamic. And I think it would work better.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, Pirlo, De Bruyne.
What's the difference, Flo, really?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, same guy.
Yeah. I'm interested to know because that the sensor on that swear word then wasn't done by me. You did that yourself. Is that just something that follows you around? Can you not swear in life? Does it just happen where you where every time you try and get a swear out, you get bleeped?
Mulv had a regulator put on me because I tend to use the word as a comma. So he had one installed last summer, and it works pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. It's
like a shot collar.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Sam, what do you make of what he says there? I don't know if it sounds a bit like this to you, but it kind of reminded me of last season of everybody just assuming that you drop Haaland into City's team and everything will go fine. Whereas actually there's a process to working out how to do it and how to get him involved. And there's probably a way to get De Bruyne and Foden in the team centrally together, but it's now down to Guardiola to work through the process to find it.
Yeah, I think it's what he's saying is it's horses for courses, basically. Like, you know, we can go with all the greatest players playing at the same time, and that's not something that he isn't used to doing or isn't open to doing. Like, you know, we've seen him manage the greatest players in the world and he's managed to get them all on the pitch, which is the point he was making there. I think it really does depend on who we're playing against and what sort of tactics we're going for. Like, you know, if we are coming up against a side that we know are going to have two rows of players on their 18-yard line, then we need creativity and we need directness. And I think that's certainly where De Bruyne, Foden, Doku, you know, Bernardo Silva all on the pitch at the same time is going to be very beneficial. But then equally, in games where we're going to need to control the ball, like against Liverpool, potentially against, you know, a big Champions League opposition in the latter stages, such as Real Madrid, we're going to need to have a lot more control on the ball. And I think having those creative players who also need to potentially do some defensive work is where the risk comes.
It's interesting. It's interesting because the more you said that, the more I thought, yeah, but what would Real Madrid or Liverpool do if City just didn't do that? If City just had all their creative players in there?
The thing is, it's get them on the counter.
Yeah.
That's the
transition.
That's the risk. Yeah, turning over, you know, the turnovers is the risk, isn't it? When you have all those creative players on the pitch. Listen, I'd love to see it. Absolutely. You know, it's one of them, isn't it? We all just want to see it because we all want it to work amazingly and blow teams away. But I'm not too sure if that's going to be the case.
Yeah. Mulv, it reminds me of back in the day, Kevin Keegan always said people would say to him that you can't get Ali Benarbia and Ayo Berkovic and Sean Wright Phillips in the same team. And his answer was always, well, why can't you? And then they'd just say to him, well, you just can't. And I'm wondering if this is just the kind of 2024 version of that. Why can't you put De Bruyne and Foden in the team? Well, you can't. Well, surely you can.
Yeah. No, it's just like that. It's just about having a balance of qualities that provide enough creativity and defensive awareness. Like the use of John Stones last season and the switch to all centre-backs across the back where defending was the first priority, that allows you more risk-taking up front. I think a lot of that has to do with the arrival of Erling Haaland. It's just about shifting maybe what's behind them allow the creative players to take risks because you know going the other way in transitions, you've got it controlled.
I just had a flashback to my Football Manager 1999-2000.
quick word to finish with on the youngsters that came in. Joe, it's good to see Micah Hamilton get back onto the pitch. Jacob Wright as well. Didn't know his name before the game. Then he's on the pitch. Who knew that was going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, kind of, I'm in the same boat. You know, I didn't know... I don't keep up with the EDS as much as I used to. So, I wasn't sure who that was, but good to see him on. Micah Hamilton is, I don't know. He's a confusing one, right? Because I was, after the Red Star game, I was pretty convinced that was the only match he was ever going to play for us.
Oh, one of them.
Not because he wasn't good, just because that is how it goes sometimes, you know?
So, somebody will come in with like 50 million and City will go, yeah, of course, we can't turn that down.
Yeah, yeah, have him buy. It's, for the longest time, I've always kind of harped on what Khaldun said when this whole project started, was that they wanted however many youth players in the starting 11 within however many years, right? And we're starting to see some of that come to fruition. So I think the more players like this that come through and actually get a chance in games that they're not the biggest, but they're still meaningful, right? It's still a knockout match and all that kind of stuff. I think the more that happens, the better. The more Pep leans into using some of the younger players, it's better for us because, I don't know, I think we all want to root for some of the kids that have come through the academy to make it to the first team, right? And you've seen it with Phil and Rico and now Oscar Bob. And just the more players that have that opportunity and the more that we can, even if it's just fantasy, right? The more that as fans, we can look at it and be like, whoa, imagine 5 years from now, we've got this guy, and this guy in there. It makes it's a more fun fan experience. And I just think it's good for the club. You know, it's good for the club to have players that are in their teens or, you know, just turning 20 that are breaking in and can actually make a difference in the side.
Yeah, we had Leon Osman on co-commentary in the UK, and he was saying, I didn't break into any first team till I was 23, and then you've got these kids at City, like Foden is not a kid, but like he's scored 70 goals for the club. It's such a badge of honour for the club to have. You're right. Let's take a look now to the Newcastle game. We're going to begin by getting a view from the northeast. I've been speaking to Alex Hurst from the True Faith Newcastle United podcast to find out what's happened to their form in the last few weeks.
I think it is very disappointing. Newcastle have had a horror December, losing 7 out of 8. And the season in November, you know, we beat Chelsea just before December started, just after they'd had that 4-4 game with you. They came to our place, we beat them 4-1 really easily. And we're fifth in the league. We look kind of favourites to go through in the Champions League. And we were in a quarterfinal of the League Cup against the same opponent, Chelsea, even though it's away from home. So we kind of thought I'd be speaking to you now, still in top four contention, or more of a contention. I think it's over, but expecting to be in Europe in some form and probably in the semi-final of a League Cup. And none of those things have happened. So from that perspective, it's been really disappointing. However, there's so much mitigation and the reasons are so clear and so obvious to everyone that I think fans, as frustrating as it's been, I think there's only really a couple of games in there that people are kind of disappointed with. I think the rest is kind of understandable.
Yeah, what's happened then in December? Why has it gone so wrong?
10 games in 30 days, and it's not just the injuries. It's the fact that the squad is just not strong enough to cope with a 13, 14 player injury crisis. And whilst I understand fans and journalists kind of said before the season, Newcastle having a squad to cope with competing on four fronts, and that was a good argument. A lot of these injuries are freak injuries. They're not repeat muscle injuries. They're shoulders popping out, going for challenges. They're people breaking their back. They're people who've not played much football this season, stepping onto the pitch and tearing a hamstring before the game's even started. There's been it's just been this kind of freak run of results or run of injuries. And Newcastle play with such an intensity that once they can't quite do that, it actually looks very, very messy. And Newcastle have, particularly away from home, they've kind of had that one home defeat to Forest, which was a bit of a disaster. But it was kind of that was the 10th game in 30 days. And the game, even though Forest were very good under their new manager, the game could have gone a lot differently. I just think away from home, Newcastle not being able to replicate the intensity has just made them look like quite an average side when they're not. But when you've got the same 11 players starting all 10 of those games and for most of them, it's just kind of the natural consequence of overachievement last season, pushing them on to a level that, whilst the first team is very good, there's not loads behind it.
Yeah, and you look at all the other teams that are in contention for, I mean, all the European places, whether it's, you know, the Champions League down to the Conference League. What are you hoping for the remainder of the season, given some of the strength that's in there?
I still think there's an outside chance of making the Champions League, whether that's 4th or 5th. And I know that might sound strange to some listeners, but the Newcastle are at home, I think, have played 10, won 8. And they're so strong at home. And if you think of, you know, we've also beaten Manchester City earlier in the season in the Cup. We beat PSG at home. We lost to Milan and Dortmund, but there were two great games where Newcastle could have easily won despite the injuries that they had in those fixtures. So I think if they can get back to something near their best, they're capable like they did back in the last season. I mean, we weren't far off this position this time last year, or about February last year. We dropped down to 7th, 8th, 9th. And then we went on a run where we won something like 8 of the last 11, 12 games of the season and finish 4th comfortably. So I think second half of the season without that fixture congestion, Newcastle are missing a whole midfield at the minute for those players to come back, for Harvey Barnes to come back, who's hardly played for Newcastle, cost 40 million quid. It gives us a real opportunity of putting one of those runs together. But, you know, we've got Manchester City and Aston Villa next two league games. If you were to lose both of those, then it's hard for me to make that case. I think any European football next season is still kind of saves the season, if that way. I wouldn't call it a good season, but it saves the season.
Yeah, of course, it's City coming to St James's next. Last season was a really kind of ding-dong game in the 3-3. Are you expecting something similar this year? Because just looking at the way the two teams are playing, I mean, I'm not confident in City keeping clean sheets at the moment. I guess you're not confident in Newcastle keeping clean sheets. It kind of screams goals, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I would be a lot more confident in at least being a close game if Joe Linton hadn't got injured on Saturday, because Newcastle played with Joe Linton, Bruno Guimarães and Sean Longstaff. And a lot of people would argue, if you ignore the players missing anyway, that's Newcastle's first choice midfield. And Joe Linton's been missing for nearly all of the period we've been discussing. And so he's come back. He's just got injury after injury. And Lewis Miley, who's 17, has to come into the team. And he's done brilliant, honestly, for a 17-year-old lad who didn't expect to play much football this season, to come in and have to play the amount of games he's had to play in the amount of days he's had to play them. He's done great. But Newcastle just look wide open in midfield when he plays, because he's 17. He's not physically big enough to be able to stop players running with the ball. He gets drawn to the ball a lot. And it just puts real pressure on Guimarães and Longstaff to do even more running. So that if Joe Linton was fit for this, I'd be kind of confident that Newcastle could probably win the game, or possibly win the game anyway. And it could be, like you say, one of the games that we enjoyed last season so much, the 3-3 game, which could have been like 8-8 in reality. I'm a little bit more concerned that Howe will have to play more conservatively than he'd like at home. I still think we'll press high in stages. I still think you'll see some of those things. But with Miley having to come in, and with him being so suspect defensively against Man City's engine room, I think Man City might enjoy more of the territory and more of the ball than otherwise would have happened if Joe Linton had been fit.
Yeah, just looking at the roll call of who's available, who do you think is Eddie Howe's likely to pick for this one?
Yes, it's kind of straightforward. It'll just be the same team that played on Saturday against Sunderland. You know, the good news is for us is that back four from last season, which has hardly played together this season, is now back. You know, Newcastle and Man City were the two best defensive sides in the league last season. Newcastle have been nowhere near that this season. So the back four picks itself. Nick Pope is injured and a massive miss. So Martin Dubravka plays in goal, and Dubravka's just started to find some form. He was hopeless when he first came back into the team. So that's the back five, and then he'll go, assuming that someone like Joe Willock isn't back, and I don't think he is, he's a huge miss for Newcastle, he'll go with Guimarães, Miley and Longstaff in the field, and then he'll go with Anthony Gordon, Miguel Almiron and Alexander Isak up front. And that's the team. There is no one else. There's no one from the bench who remotely comes close to getting in that side. The chances are he picks two or three goalkeepers again, because there's just not the players there.
Yeah, just looking at form as well. It feels like form's been problematic away from St James's, but at home you've been fine. Is that fair?
I've been great at home until the Forest game. They didn't look like a team who would even get a point from Newcastle. Never mind beat them. I mean, Liverpool won early this season with 10 men, which is like a hugely damaging defeat for us and a kind of springboard for their season. But they didn't deserve anything from the game. Newcastle battered them with 11 men and then battered them with 10 men. Hit the post and the crossbar a few times. Alisson pulls off some wonder saves, and then Darwin Nunez does what Darwin Nunez can do, and that's like one game out of six. Looked like an £85 million centre forward and take the only two chances Liverpool had in the game, and fair play to them. It was a great win, but they didn't look like beating us. And then that Forest game, it was almost a game too far. Newcastle go 1-0 up, were playing well, had numerous chances to score, and then they basically hit the counter-attack three times from a really well-organised, motivated Forest side who just got a new manager. And I don't think Newcastle would make those mistakes again. But at home, they've been great. You know, they beat Man City early in the season, which was quite a close game in the League Cup, 1-0. They've been really good in the Champions League fixtures at home. I think really unlucky to lose the two games they did against two very good sides in Dortmund and Milan. So yeah, like they are a different prospect at home, and I think that it'll be a tough game for Manchester City purely because it's at St James's Park.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how do you see it playing out?
Yeah, it's a real hard one. I think if Newcastle go behind, they have very little to be able to get back into the game. They can't bring anyone on from the bench to change the game. You know, your players on the bench are like Matt Ritchie, who hardly played a minute of Premier League football last season, and same with Paul Dummett. There's just no one else there. unfortunately. So I think if Man City take the lead, particularly in the first half, it could be a really long day for Newcastle. However, you know, a player like Alexander Isak, I think he scored in his last three now. He's just come back into the team and just started to look fit again. He sort of scored earlier against City this season at St James's. He's world-class centre forward. I still don't really understand, even though Newcastle are good now, or good last season, how they managed to get him for 60, 65 million when you think of what good strikers go for these days. So Newcastle have got a chance. I probably think Manchester City will have too much. I think Manchester City having options from the bench the later the game goes on will work in their favour. The only thing I'm kind of clinging on to is we played Arsenal at St James's when they were unbeaten in November, and we were just starting this injury crisis, and Newcastle kind of just managed the game quite well. Arsenal didn't really create anything, and then Newcastle kind of stole a goal in the 70th minute, then defended for their lives. It's going to take a similar type of performance to win this one, but I think Man City have too much going forward compared to Arsenal for Newcastle to be able to replicate that. I don't think Newcastle can win this game 1-0. I think we'll have to win it 3-2 or 4-3. So yeah, I think there'll be goals.
Yeah. Well, we've got the charity bet coming up, Alex. Let's have a score prediction for that. What are you going to go for?
Yeah, I'll go 3-2 Newcastle for me.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast, and we're very sorry about that.
That was Alex Hurst from the True Faith podcast. Mulv, we talked extensively about De Bruyne earlier. He's expecting to be back on the bench against Newcastle. What would you like to see from City in terms of their shape and their attack for this game?
We need to ride the Foden wave, David.
Yeah.
We need to make him the focal point of the attack. You asked specifically about how to attack Newcastle. Yeah. Lean into him and his form at the moment. He's playing probably his best ever form, and there's a big debate out there about I think it's Foden versus Saka, is the main one, which the naysayers about Foden will tell you that he's not a first team player always for City. Like, he sits on the bench a lot, and they rate Saka higher, but It's not Foden's fault. He's, his best position is shared by Kevin De Bruyne, probably the best at it in the world. So it's great to see him come in that role and have the massive impact he's had.
Yeah. Sam, Newcastle have been really good at home and absolutely appalling away from home. 24 of their 29 points this season have come at St James's Park. How much of this game is killing the crowd as much as it is dealing with the opposition?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's certainly the case at St James's Park. We know how passionate the fans are in Newcastle for their team. To put that into context, their home record this season, only Aston Villa and Liverpool have won more at home in terms of points in the Premier League this season. They did lose against Forest last time out, however, at St James's, and they're on a three-game losing run at the minute in the league. So then this could be a good time to play them in that sense.
Are you nervous?
Not nervous. I'm more excited, to be honest with you, because the game last season at St James's Park was, it was an entertaining one, wasn't it? And in the end, City just couldn't get the best of Newcastle. But I think the way both teams are playing at the minute, I think City can go there and be confident of getting the job done.
Yeah. Joey, just to put any listeners' minds at ease, Sam's talking there about Newcastle having such a good home record. City have got the best away record in the league.
Yeah. So I'm not too concerned about it. It's gonna be a big match and everything, and we know the atmosphere there and all that, but Newcastle are in a weird run of form. We've got De Bruyne coming back. Foden's been unreal. So I think we're in a good spot. Also, I think I saw, maybe I'm wrong, is Scottish international Joe Linton injured for this?
He is.
Yeah, so that's a big plus. You know, he's one of the main guys in their midfield. So, have to deal with the Scot in there, then I think we're in good shape.
I'd have thought Joe Linton sounds more like he took he had a middling run score rate for Australia in like the 80s.
True.
Yeah, I wouldn't have gone Scottish, but I mean, maybe he does sound Scottish. Who knows?
Is he not Scottish?
I don't think he's Scottish. No, need to double check that. But, yeah, I don't think he is. Mulf, obviously the 3-3 has been brought up a couple of times already. City just could not control that game. They've struggled to control games this season. Does that impact this one, do you think? Because I don't know if Eddie Howe would just look at it and go, well, let's try and just make it a bit more chaotic. City struggle in those games.
So my memory's generally awful, but I remember the 3-3 very well. It was Pep trying to play Kyle Walker in the John Stones role to no effect, and that Saint-Maximin just ran wild on us that day. It was also, I just watched the highlights back, it's also the game where Kevin De Bruyne played this ridiculous through ball into Bernardo Silva, who had a tidy finish to make it 3-3.
He had to be offside, and then when you watched it, it was like, oh, he wasn't offside. How has he done that?
That's classic Kevin De Bruyne there. Anyway, I think I'm not too nervous, David. I think we've slowly been getting back to our best in terms of control, especially Rodri and his total commitment to flawless football. Plus, Foden refuses to give the ball away in central areas ever since the Crystal Palace game. So, yeah, I'm quite optimistic about our chances of controlling this one.
One thing to mention on the point that you made there, David, about like City's being the best away side. Recently, we've conceded the first goal in 6 of our last 8 away league matches. We did in the last 2, but came back to win in both of those. So I think there's a bit of a pattern emerging there away from home where
let Newcastle City score aren't... and we'll go and win it. Is what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, yeah. let Newcastle score and City go on and win it. But in terms of potentially control, we're not doing that so well away from home. And I think Pep will be determined to control this game even more so than ever because of that.
Yeah, I'm wondering, Joey, if it might be a case of City just might not get much time in possession, even in deep areas, because Newcastle play high. They play really intensively. And I just wonder if it's a case of Guardiola saying to them, before the game, look, you're just going to have to be brave on the ball.
Yeah, either that or I wouldn't hate, if they are going to press really high and intense for large portions of the match, I wouldn't hate if we did what we did against Arsenal last season and just say, screw it, go along.
Yeah.
Arsenal last year where they, I'm just trying to appeal to the British audience for once. They already aren't going to like my accent. They're not going to like that I'm talking about the sport because I'm American. So I gotta try to get ahead of it.
Gotta get them on side somehow. Yeah.
Are they still listening?
No, there's no chance, brother. There's no chance.
Mate, it's us. They've never been listening.
Up to big man. On me head, son. Like, just do some of that. But we against Arsenal last season, they were pressing really high, particularly Odegaard. We'd kind of bait him into pressing, and then we would just went over the top, and it worked pretty well. And I wouldn't hate doing that against Newcastle, at least a little bit, just to kind of break up what they do, right? If it breaks up the press a little bit and they back off a little, it might give us more time on the ball in the long run. So I think switching it up and varying how we attack probably could be a good move just to keep them on their toes.
Yeah, catch them unaware. I always wonder what would happen if, teams that set up against City to play out of possession and expect not to have the ball, if City just went, you have it, just see what happens.
Oh, I'm the same.
A little tip for you, Joey, if you wanted to get the British listeners on board and specifically the Man City fans, you should have just said, just, you know, get the ball and give it to Gordon. What else do you need to say?
Give it bloody Gordon.
Sam, I've not asked this question for a while, but since he is back and available for old time's sake more than anything else, Docker or Grealish for this one?
I still think it might be a bit too early, but he did look sharp, I thought, when he came on against Huddersfield. And I know it's against Huddersfield, all respect to them, but I just think he'll stick with Grealish. I think as well, Doku coming on, scoring a goal, gives Grealish a challenge, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's clear he's been brought in to light the fire underneath Grealish, if you like, and to try and inspire him and challenge him. That competition for that place is really hot now with him coming in and having a brilliant start to life at City. I think Grealish has this opportunity to say to Pep, Doku's fit, but I'm still the main man. Yeah, so he has to go to St. James and deliver.
Yeah. Right. Well, let's get some predictions on the board. We had another correct score on the charity bet last week. This time it was from Matt Shaw, our Huddersfield guest. He correctly predicted that 5-0 pummeling for the Terriers. That means we've now raised £690 for the Man City fans food bank support group this season. William Hill is giving us 3 £10 correct score singles. So let's see if we can't make it 3 wins in 3 shows. We heard earlier on that Alex Hurst has gone for a 3-2 Newcastle win. That's 40-1 and £400 if he's right. Sam, what are you having for this?
I'm going to go for a 3-1 win. I think the trend will continue and Newcastle will score first, but City will get the job done.
Yeah. Do you remember the days when that stat used to be, City are losing at half-time in an away Premier League game and they don't come back and win? Keep doing it every week these days, so maybe that's another one.
Although this time round, we're not taking De Jong off and pushing Yaya.
Yeah. Yeah. 12-1 if you're right, Sam. £120. And we've only got one more bet, which means that Joey and Mulve, you're going to have to fight it out between yourselves to give us a score. So what are you having between you?
Well, I got in first, David. And I've gone for a 4-2. I don't have much conviction about it. It just sounds like a pretty sexy result.
And it's
City, that is.
Yeah, it's a sexy amount of money as well, if you're right, because it's also 40-1, so £400 if it comes in.
Let's go.
So fingers crossed for that one. You've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for more information on gambling responsibly, take a look at begambleaware.org. We are going to squeeze in a listener question to finish. Get in touch for next week at Blue Moon Podcast on Twitter, or X as it's now known. Email us, fill in the form on the website, bluemoonpodcast.com. That's exactly what Tim has done. He says, walking to the Etihad before the game, we were discussing whether we'd rather have prime Aguero or last season's Haaland up front for City. The argument boiled down to Aguero probably being better suited for the overall system, but Haaland scoring more goals and having the bigger fear factor for opponents. So which would you guys pick and why? Really easy to do this one. So cycle three. Sam, where would you go for this?
It depends on what team we're talking about. Are we talking about now, City now, would we rather have Aguero or Haaland this season? Or are we talking about, would we rather have had Haaland when, you know, we were in peak Aguero era sort of thing? So I can see...
This is the longest don't know I've ever heard, you know.
both arguments are compelling for Aguero and Haaland. I think... Oh God, it pains me to say it, but I think Haaland... for just his all-round play as well. All-round striker. You know, he's the big man up front as well as being absolutely lightning quick and knows where the goal is. Aguero is incredible as well, and it's a horrible question to answer.
I'm not sure I agree with you either. I think, kind of system-wise, I think Aguero changed his game so much with Guardiola that he proved he could do it when... Haaland, I think, still has a lot of adaptation to do to get into City, but it's hard, isn't it, Joey? Because he scores so many goals.
Yeah, absolutely. I think.
It's hard, isn't it? Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think I'd go Aguero just because something about. I was just thinking about this. Something about Aguero and Doku in the same side.
Yeah,
I don't know why that's what jumped out, but something about those together is terrifying.
Must admit, I have noticed in the past few games, I've been really frustrated with the lack of that Aguero run at the front post that he always used to make. The ball's getting there a lot of, you know, a lot of the time, and it's like it's just screaming out for someone to make that near post run a la Aguero, which he had so much success with. You know, I think back to when we were away at Old Trafford, the amount of times he did that against Phil Jones when he just run near post and put it into the top corner, keeper's near side as well. He just made it look so easy. And the amount of times recently the ball's been flashed across the box towards a near post and no one's on the end of it. I'm just like, I can feel myself in my seat screaming, Aguero! Yeah. but then again, Haaland hasn't been playing recently, so who knows?
Yeah. Mulv, where would you go for this?
Yeah, they're both rubbish. I like the look of that Hoyland kid at United.
Nice. He's pretty good, huh?
Yeah. What's he scored? One Premier League goal in 100 appearances or something like that?
Just wait.
Worth it, TBH. You know what I mean? Worth every penny.
Yeah. But to take this question on then a little bit, because I am interested in this side of it as well, because we've seen different eras of Guardiola at City now. Mulv, what's your favourite of Guardiola's styles, let's say? Because, I mean, that the principles of his football are the same all the way through. But you look at like 2017 to 19, you've got the 100 points, 98 points, those teams. Then you got the false nine era. And then after that, we've got last season's treble winners. They all have their own identity. So which is your favourite out of all of them?
Yeah, my favourite is definitely the Centurions. Only because the English media said that Guardiola could never win it that way. And not only did he win it that way, he did it in record-breaking fashion. And that way, meaning, you know, free-flowing pet ball without commitment to tackles.
What's he saying? So, yeah, I still think about that quote every day.
So, yeah, just out of sort of spite and sticking it to the English media, I'm most happy with the Centurions.
Yeah, Joey, where would you go for this? Because obviously the Centurions had a style that I think a lot of people hark back to now and would like to see more of, but I don't know if it's possible anymore.
Yeah, I'm with Mulv on this. It's the Centurions. It was just so fun. Like, it was just one of the most... That year was one of the more fun seasons I can ever think of, just in terms of watching my team, you know?
Do you feel like the Centurions as a group of players for City didn't get the silverware that they deserved?
I don't think they, not only silverware, I don't think they get the recognition they deserve. I think that season, especially now that we've won the treble, kind of gets forgotten about for some reason. I don't hear that one come up as much, but maybe that's just me, but they scored 100 points, and like that, it's just such a dumb number to score in the Premier League, and the way we went about it, and the players that were involved in that side, and the way that Pep was able to get the best out of everybody. I mean, that was around the time that we were looking at Gabby Jesus as like, oh my God, this might be the guy. Like, this might be the guy that replaces Aguero type thing. And now he's not even at the club anymore. And you just look at what, like Mulv said, how Pep was able to do it. And then you look at who he was able to get the best out of it. It was just the best. Wasn't that the same year that Aguero almost fought a cop down at Southampton too?
Yeah. Bournemouth. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's another good memory, you know, because of Aguero going at a police officer.
Yeah, Haaland, by the way, when we all thought Jesus was going to be the heir to Aguero's throne, Haaland was 16 turning 17. Not to make anybody feel old.
And he scored 30 that season.
Yeah. Sam, talk to me about this, because as much as I can see the argument for the 100-point season, you know what? The way they took Real Madrid apart, the way they took Bayern Munich apart last season, I loved it.
It was an easy route to the final, though, wasn't it? just to go back to Centurions, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Not you as well.
No. I want to chat through. Just incredible, and I still don't think that achievement gets the recognition it deserves. I the season after was brilliant as well. Obviously, winning the titles, the trophies that that were, you know, justified with the way they were playing. I think getting 98 points and Liverpool having their best ever season on 97 points is still like so sweet, isn't it? But yeah, I have to say I am firmly in the treble winners camp, because I think it was more the style was very mature. I think it's what we saw last season was a culmination of everything that Guardiola's been working towards with Manchester City. Mm. And I think...
And let's be honest, the John Stones solution at the end of the season was, I mean, it was inspired and incredible. And
it was just, yeah. it was just that sort of matureness in the City team that, you know, they've overcome so many adversities over Guardiola's tenure, particularly in the Champions League. And, you know, they are in a position mentally that they, you know, did go on to win it. And we saw that come to fruition, which they've been working on for some time. But I just think in general, you know, across all competitions, the style was very, very mature. It was strictly business, I think, everything. You know, we saw that in the FA Cup final straight away, 10 seconds in, absolutely no messing about. You know, it was ruthless and strictly business, very mature. Yeah, we'll take all the trophies. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I can hear Sam Lee, by the way, shouting at me that I've not bigged up the false nine era, because that's his favourite City team. So shout out to that for Sam. But for now, that brings this week's Blue Moon podcast to a close. Thank you very much for listening. And thanks to my guests for this one. Sam Rosbottom.
Always a pleasure.
And the Noisy Neighbours podcasters, Joey.
Yeah, thanks for having us on, man. I appreciate it.
And Mulv.
Thank you, David.
Where can people find you guys? I mean, it's a daft question to ask on podcast now, because it's literally stick the name into Google. But go on, where can people find you?
Exactly. No, we're at Noisy Pod.
Yeah, at Noisy Pod on Twitter, and then Noisy Neighbors Podcast. This is going to make people mad. Neighbors without the U, because
that
we're
won't
here.
Endear you to the British audience. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. I sound like this, so I'm it's an uphill battle anyways. But on all the good podcast apps and not Podbean, and then we're also on YouTube. We do live shows and live call-in shows on there too. That's fun. So yeah, we're kind of everywhere.
Yeah, well worth subscribing to. Go and have a look at that. Join us again next week to review the Newcastle game. Stay tuned for a clip of this week's Patreon show as well. I'll see you next week. See you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
Was it potentially a double save as well? Or
yeah, well, he tipped it onto the bar. And then Gus Poyet's heading it into the empty net. And like at the moment where Poyet makes connection with the ball, Arison's still not in the frame of the picture. And then he's suddenly out of nowhere, dives on it.
And presumably we were still... Were we three, still 3-0 down at that point? And that's basically started the comeback at all.
It might have been 3-1. Certainly it would have made it 4-something. And whether that was 4-1 or 4-0, it gets to the point where you're like, well, okay, you've just killed the game. You've killed the momentum that City were building.
I mean, and I think the thing as well, I think Gus Poyet, I think, came on for someone else as well. So he'd come on and he'd had a relatively good game as well. And I just couldn't see us coming back from it at all. I just couldn't see any way that it was gonna be any different than us going out of a competition yet again in unceremonious circumstances.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast, and join us again next time for another episode.